just an introduction. This week's Sedra, Avila Shomayim Vadaveiro, Ishma Ha'oret Simrei Fi. Rashi explains there that why the Shomayim, why the Oret, explains that they are the Edim, the witnesses, to see if we keep the Torah. If we keep the Torah, then they are the ones who will give us the schar. And if chas v'shalom, if we don't, then v'horet lo yititenis to the law, then they will be the first ones to bring the punishment. Here we are, the beginning of this week's Sedra of Hazinu, just before Rosh Hashanah. This is a time where we can show our steadfastness to our Kodesh Baruch Hu's mitzvah in coming ahead of time. After immediately Rosh Hashanah, the Dinim Shmita starts. It's a great cover that we have down in Greenhouse, Shlita, the Dayan of our Kashrus, of our Beis Din, who is in charge and Achroi for the Kashrus. And he, with his diligence, as he goes daily, both in the day and in the evenings and the night, as the case calls for it, to make sure that whatever we have to eat, whatever passes through into our mouths, is not just okay, but it is without question. We'll give us, we have great covers in having Stein Greenhouse to give us a share on the various dinim that will affect us in the year and a half, or slightly more, to come, the dinim of Shemitah.
And also thank you for inviting me to be here this evening. Thanks to the honorary officers. I will try in the space of an hour to summarize, or just under an hour, to summarize the dinim of Shmita. I would say that the word Shmita and Shviyat both mean the seventh year. The two words are interchangeable. You may find that I jump from one to the other without intending to, but Shmita and Shviyat are both synonyms for the seventh year. First mention we have in the Torah of the mitzvah of Shmita is in Parshas Mishpatim, where the Torah writes, Perikov Gimel,
for 6 years you may sow your land and gather its produce, and in the seventh year you shall release it, you shall let it go, perhaps a good translation, and the poor people can eat it, and the remainder will be eaten by the wild animals in the field, to your vineyard and to your olive grove. Another place where the Torah is more better known is the beginning of Parshas Bahar, Vayikrach of Hay. They first took him down with the Torah, Vamar Talem, Kisavoy El Oret Hashem, Nesim Achem, Vishavoso Oret Shavos Hashem, and the earth shall rest a rest year for the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Sheish Shonim Tizah Sodecho, for 6 years you sow the seeds of your field, for 6 years you prune your vines, or Saftes the Vos, you gather the produce of Ashona Ashvir, Shabbat, Shabbosoin, Yiye, the Oret. There should be a total rest, Shabbos to Hashem, Sodcho Le Sizro, Charmacho Le Sizmo. And I think the psukim to most of you are familiar. I won't go into all the details. We'll now talk about what the halachas are, as the Rambam already said. The seventh year, the Shnas HaShmita, will commence Mir Hashem on Wednesday evening of this week, when it becomes Rosh Hashanah, when Tavshir Samachet is ushered in, then it will be the year of Shmita. What are the basic dinim of Shmita? There are four basic dinim. The first one is not to work on the soil in an agricultural sense. It doesn't mean you mustn't build a house or things of that nature, but no work on the soil which is for the production of food. That everything that does grow, the second din is that everything that does grow shall be declared hefka, that means free for all, anybody can take it without any restrictions. The third thing is that whatever does grow has a kedusha. Now that's not quite so explicit in the pasuk, but the Gemara says ki yovel hi kodesh yelochem, and the Gemara darshens that kain we learn shmita from yovel, and just as the produce which is known as kodesh, as hektish is kodesh, so anything which grows in the seventh year is also kodesh. That's the third din. And the fourth din is that there comes a time when all produce of shmita has to be, you have to perform the mitzvah of biul, veis yud ayin vav reish. And that you already see in Rashi and Chumash. Rashi says, v'lim hem tucho v'lachayu ha-shem b'artecho, hi ha-pashas v'ah, hi ha-chol tzvu oso lechol. And the Chachamim wonder why does it have to tell you that the wild animals can also come and eat the fruit. It would appear to be irrelevant. And from that the Gemara derives, for as long as there are fruits growing which are hefka, which are free, then you can keep certain stocks of what you have, and when there are no longer any available out in the wild, then you have to declare hefka anything that you've got. And as we'll see later on, that's called the Zman Habil. For every type of crop, for every type of fruit, there is a time when there comes a Zman Habil for anything that grew during Shemitah. Now we have to take each of these points one by one and explain the details. We start off by saying that like all mitzvahs which depend on the soil, it only applies in Eretz Yisrael. All the dinim of Shemitah only apply to that which grows within Eretz Yisrael, inside Eretz Yisrael. Now it's not easy to transcribe the borders of Eretz Yisrael as written in Tanakh and as given in the Gemara into an actual map today. It's not possible to be accurate to within a few miles, and therefore they are of necessity grey areas on the borders of Eretz Yisrael as far as Kedushas Shvi'is is concerned, and of course the same for other dinim as well, but particularly where it's relevant, exactly where is the end of the borders of Eretz Yisrael as they were captured at the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, which part was taken, which part was not taken. It cannot be definitively decided, so they remain grey areas where one has to be machmir because of a suffix, because of the doubt. Maybe later on we'll see how that is relevant. Now the next question is whether all the dinim of Shmita applied to Zman Hazeh or not. On that there's no machlekes, they do apply. The question is whether it's Midrash Torah or whether it is Midrabanon. Machlekes you'll find in the Gemara in Gittin, the Lamed Vov, the machlekes in Rebbe and the Chachamim, whether the dinim of Shmita now after the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, whether they apply Midrash Torah or whether they're only Midrabanon. You would think that it automatically will affect every doubt, because there's a Sofik Deraita, we have to go to Chumra, a Sofik Rabbanon, you go to Kula. Not necessarily that would be the case with regard to Shmita. It depends whether the source, whether the Kaira Sofik, whether the Sofik itself is in the Bintayra or not. But perhaps we leave that aside for the moment. Certainly the majority of Rishonim Paskin that Shmita Bizman Hazeh is only Mizrabonon. Only has the status of Mizrabonon. Now, it may be of interest to you to know, the Torah says that the Chisayvu in Pashas Baha, Manocha Bashona Hashviyas, Heimlai, Nizra, Balei Nesai, Vestavu Aseinu, what are we going to eat in the seventh year? The Chodesh Baruch Hu, don't worry. Vitzavise, Kirchosi, Lachem Bashona Hashishis. I guarantee you a bumper crop in every sixth year. Guaranteed. Now if I say, Shmita Bizman Hazeh is Menah Torah, then of course the promise of the Torah that you will get a bumper crop in the sixth year applies as well. If I say the Torah doesn't require you, it's only rabbinic or it's only with Rabbanon, then it's not clear whether Rabbanon have the power to bring down that blessing from heaven for a bumper crop in the sixth year, for those that are Shemitah observant. The opinion of the Sma is that the bracha doesn't apply if you do keep Shemitah. The Chazon Ish Lechayim Bracha, who was the specialist on Shemitah, he said, yes, it does apply. It applies even today. Those who observe Shemitah, or those who intend to observe Shemitah, will get their blessing in the sixth year. But he warns, it can be lost if you do other things, other than naughty things. Sometimes the Shpoch will promise you a reward, but because you misbehaved in some other way, you could lose it. So you won't be able to ask a kasha. I know somebody who kept Shemitah, the same thing you can't ask a kasha. You know somebody who keeps the Zohar and gets ill. You can't ask a question why it should be, but the Chazon Ish holds on principle, and there have been many cases where it's been shown it's a special blessing to have accrued to those people that kept and observed the Shemitah. Akoponim, it's interesting to know that the Gemara in Sanhedrin of Lamatesh says, Zaru Shisha Venuchu Bashvir Kedesh Teidu Kili Haaretz. The Torah told you can work for 6 years, but every seventh year you have to let the land lie fallow, let it rest, as it must be, to remind yourselves that the earth is mine, not yours. And that all the production that comes in the year comes because of my blessing, because of I want it to happen, otherwise it won't happen. And make us to bear in mind that land is not yours, it's only given to you by the grace of God, and therefore the Torah reminds you, gives you a timely reminder every seventh year that there's nothing you can do during the seventh year. Now, let's look at, you know, you're all familiar with the fact that there are obvious malachas and there are tolas. To every, for example, on Shabbos, to every one of the 39 of the obvious malachas, of the head malachas, there are numerous tolas that you all remember from the Gemara Bava Kamma, that the Torah says, yes, the tolas of the malachas have the same severity as the heads of the malachas, as the obvious malachas. In the case of Shemitah, the Gemara says explicitly in Moed Katan, Dav Gimel, that the toldos are not the same as the obvious malachas. In other words, the toldos specifically said what are the malachas that are forbidden, and all others which don't come under that heading are only osim mizrabonon. And we see in a moment the practical difference. I'm giving you the outline so that later on we will come to how it's relevant to us here in Kutlaret. But we need the background. So the Torah asks us, obvious malachas, and the Rabbonon asks us the Tolas, the similar malachas. What are the things which the Torah asks us? The Torah asks us Zriya, which is counting, and the Torah asks us Mira, which is pruning. The Torah asks us Tzira, which is harvesting of crops, and the Torah asks us Betzira, which is picking the fruits of trees. Additionally, from the Pasuk Machoresh Makotit Tishwes, the Gemara learns that plowing is forbidden and planting. That means not only sowing Zriya, which is sowing seeds, but who are then planting of anything, even non-food, planting a hedge, planting a lawn, is also forbidden. Minahatera, during the seventh year. The Chachomim answered the Toldos, that means things which are similar. So any work which is done to improve the growth is a Toldos of planting. So for example, watering the plants, fertilizing, spraying, or even protecting it from the sun, from the elements. Anything which promotes, which improves the growth, is not awesome in our Torah, but it is awesome in the Rabbonim. Any work which is done on the soil to prepare the soil, like plowing, which is awesome in our Torah, is there to prepare the land. So also, any malacha which prepares the land before you put the plant in, comes under the Issa the Rabbonim of a Toldah of Karisha. Now, the Nafkimina is the difference, the practical difference in Osem and Atoira Midrabonon, is where the Easter comes Midrabonon, the Chachomim have leeway, they can make exceptions, they can make exemptions. Whereas Osem and Atoira, they have no power to make exceptions or exemptions. And therefore, the Chachomim said, we can't touch the Malachas which the Torah forbids, but we can on our own, and we will allow you to do, for example, watering to the extent that is needed to prevent the tree or the plant from dying. Not to improve it. There's a very fine line between whether watering is to improve or whether it is in order to prevent it from dying, but you are allowed to undertake melachas derabanan, spraying it, stop the insects from attacking it, not to improve it, but not for the Gemara called le'avruya, but le'ukma, to keep it going. Obviously, we're talking about that which was planted before Shmita. If somebody planted something in Shmita against the Torah, we won't give him a heter to keep it going. Provided it was planted before Shmita and it's in danger of dying, then he is allowed to do the melachos derabanan, like watering, spraying, and so on and so forth, in order. I won't go into the details in this, it's sure they have exact tables of how many liters of water and how often you are allowed to apply to each particular type of plant as given by an agricultural expert. This is the minimum that is needed in order to prevent it from dying. And if you've got a tree here that will die, and if you spray it with a hose, it will automatically water all around. You won't be allowed to. You have to bring a watering can and pour it exactly where it's needed. Strict restrictions, over to the extent that the melacha derabanan is needed to prevent the deterioration or the death of the existing plant, the Chachamim allowed the Isurim Derabonon. They can't change the Isurim Deraisa, but they can take the Toldos. Since we said the Toldos are only with the Rabbonon, the Chachamim allowed it. We have a big Shaila, which any of you have relatives in Eretz Yisrael will know immediately. What would be the din? Can you set, the same as you can set a time switch before Shabbos to make the lights go on Shabbos, would you be allowed to set a time switch before the Shmita starts, which will every day sprinkle water for half an hour onto your garden or onto your orchard or whatever it might be, on the understanding that you do nothing at all during Shmita to change it? You don't bring it forward or backwards, you don't put it on, off, you do nothing, you set it for a whole year to go. It's a big shaila whether it's permitted or not. The Tzadin, the side to say that you're not allowed to, could be simply because of Marisol Ayin. He must do thinking which looks wrong. He's got his sprinkler going, keeping his lawn going there. What did he do? It could be because of Marisol Ayin. And there are others that say that the Torah wants the land to rest. And that's the opposite of letting it rest. I said to Shaila, I won't be Machria, I won't pass on that Shaila for you, it's not the gay issue, but in case you come to Ezra and you see a proven place that, and the sprinkler is working there, it may have been set from before Shmita to run automatically throughout the year. But let's leave that aside for the moment and we'll move on to the obligation to be maskir. That means to declare free for all. Hefka means free for all, to declare free for all anything that is growing in Shmita. Hashmir, Tishmateno, Natashko, as the Torah says here. And the Torah says, "Va'isa Shabbat Oras Lachem La'Achla L'Chol La'Avdecha La'Masecha." It's free for all. So the Torah wanted to teach you, as we said, "Kili Oras," the land is not yours; it's mine. And therefore, the Torah said that everything that has that grows in Shmita and that has Kedushas Shmita, and we said one of the dinim is that has Kedushas Shmita, is the Torah says it has to be Hefka. Now, Minatoya, that means literally you should take away the wall or take away the door so that anybody and anything can get in and out. And already in the time of the Mishnah, the Chum said, saw that the result will be that the people will get nothing. Either the animals will come in, or if they can't get in, the lobbyists will get in, and there'll be nothing left for the beasts and citizens. So that the Chum said, one minute, don't quite do it like that. Put the gate there, put a latch on first before you keep the animals out. And then you can even go so far as to put a lock on, provided you put a little note, it's free, anything that's growing here is free for all, please come to get the key, nearby, not travel to the other end of Eretz Yisrael. Nearby, you can come and get the key if you can help yourself. We'll see in a moment how much you can help yourself, but you'll be allowed to come and to help yourself. Now, let's, for the sake of clarity, we will differentiate between fruit and vegetables, although it's not an accurate definition. Those things on which you make bread for your ate, when you eat them, then we call those fruits. Those things on which you make bread for your adoma, we will call the vegetables. The Gemara derives that what has Kedushas Shvi'is is the timing is totally different for bread for your ate, for fruits and for vegetables. For fruit, it depends when the fruit develops. Therefore, any fruit which you'll find in Eretz Yisrael growing now, and in the next 6 months, maybe a matter of 9 months, 10 months, will have started before Shmita started. It will have started growing. Any fruit which is now on the trees will have developed, will have begun to develop early in the year. It has no Kedusha Shmita. You don't have to declare an Esther even in the middle of Shmita. It doesn't belong. The fruits belong to Shmita if they were Chaynate. It's not clear exactly which stage, but it doesn't really matter, because fruits develop at the beginning of the spring and they're harvested at the end of the summer. So therefore all the fruits that will be harvested at the end of this summer don't belong to Shmita, because they all started their development in the summer of Zion, which was before Shmita. Those which will blossom next spring and then will become ripe right at the end of summer Ches and the beginning of summer Ches, and perhaps to the middle of summer Ches, they will have Kedusha Shmita. So the Kedusha, the sanctity of Shmita, of Peiros, are totally different to those of vegetables. Because in vegetables, it depends on the day in which they were picked. And therefore, the vegetables that are picked today don't have Kedusha Shmita, but the vegetables that will be picked after Rosh Hashanah will all have Kedusha Shmita from the first moment, because the Rosh of the Gemara is the Yerek goes according to the Lekita when it's picked, and therefore Kedusha Shmita on vegetables will start immediately from even before you blow the shofar. As soon as you come to Shul and you say Ochet Lada Kitala on Erev on the night of Rosh Hashanah, that anything is picked from that moment onward has Kedusha Shmita. Now we come to the next point. There's a machlokes rishonim which is not so relevant to us here. What the Torah means when it says that everything that grows in Shmita is hefker, does it mean obligation on the owner to declare it hefker, or it's automatic? It becomes hefker automatically. The Torah has already declared it hefker, whether you like it or not. Now, if Gemina will be, the difference will be if somebody grows it in this field, can you climb over the fence and get it? If I say the Torah declares it hefker, you're not a gunner. If I say the owner has to declare it, if he declares it, if he can take it, if he doesn't, it's nothing. Then that doesn't have so much relevance to us. But there's another big machlekes between the Beit Yosef and the Mabit, which has very, very great ramifications. You've all come across at some time or another a shayla in the Gemara: can a goy have ownership over the land in Eretz Yisrael to take away its kedusha? Does Goyish own land become chutzlaret, although it's in Eretz Yisrael? Or that's known the Gemara, yesh kinyan la'ayvikachovim la'achia the kedusha? Or whether no, Eretz Yisrael retains its kedusha irrespective of who it belongs to. And of course, the greatest relevance is whether that which grows in Goyish own soil within the borders of Eretz Yisrael, does it have kedusha shvias, or does it not have kedusha shvias? We will see shortly that there are an enormous number of restrictions on the Torah itself. It says, well, the Shabbat says, the Gemara says, the Ochra means to eat and not to destroy, to eat and not to sell as a business, Leila Schera, Leila Hester. There are lots and lots of restrictions on what you may or may not do with peiros or vegetables which have kedushas shvias. It's very crucial to know whether that applies to Goyish owned land or not. The Beit Yosef writes in Alkos Reichel that Goyish owned land has no Kedusha Shvias. So writes the Beit Yosef, and it must be admitted, till about 70 years ago, where the main issue was in Yerushalayim, that was the accepted view. Although it was well known that the Mabit was of the opinion, the contemporary of the Beit Yosef, and he was of the opinion that Eretz Yisrael retains its Kedusha irrespective of whose hand it's in. There's no kinyan for a guy to take away Kedusha Shvias. And the Chazanish, who was the great man of the older dinim of Eretz Yisrael, the Mora of the Eretz Yisrael, and he decided that the Beit Yosef himself, at the end of his life, changed his mind and agreed to the Mabit, and therefore he went very strongly in the view, and all his followers followed the view that Eretz Yisrael, whatever grows in there, has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, irrespective of who it belongs to. Now, we come back to that in a few moments. You will remember that Rashi tells you in Chumash, so Rashi says like this: you know, all the Bereb Yadom crops have to be planted annually, not only crops like wheat and barley, but your tomatoes and your cucumbers and your peppers. These have to be planted on an annual basis. So logically, if you don't do any work in the seventh year of the soil, you shouldn't have any Kveirat Ha'adamah growing, except that which started growing before Shemitah, during Shemitah. But the Torah recognizes that when you harvest a crop, then it's bound to happen that some of the grains of wheat will fall onto the ground. As you're harvesting it, some of them will burst and the grains will fall on the ground. You're going to go out picking them up. And therefore, even if you leave the land fallow for a full year, there will be something growing. That's what's known as tzviach, the Torah, tzviach. That which grows of its own accord without you planting it. And the Torah says, even if that happens, you're restricted. You're restricted. They think so. You mustn't take charge of it. You can only take as much as you need for your own personal consumption. And the same applies to all the things which are hefker in Shemitah. All the fruits that grow. Fruit trees grow if you do nothing. Fruit continues to grow. The Torah restricts you to what way you are, in what manner you are allowed to harvest them, and what quantity. You mustn't use the proper tools that we would normally use, and you mustn't take any vast quantities. You have to look, when you go into a field that's a shmita field, you have to look as if you're going shopping. What do you do shopping? Normally, I'm not talking about when you go to the supermarket with a car. Normally, when you go shopping, you buy enough for your family for the next 2 or 3 days. That's what normal shopping used to be. That's the amount that any individual is allowed to take from a hefkadika shmita field. It's hefkad to everybody, not one person to come and grab the lot. Each person may take as much, then come back again for more. Like you do in the shop, you buy so much, you come back for more. So the Torah only allows you, nobody's the balabol, it's hefker for everybody, don't be greedy. Everybody gets a chance. So therefore you're only allowed to take as much as you need for immediate consumption for your family, the next few days, for your immediate family. That's how much you're allowed to take. But the Torah was worried, the Chachamim were worried, if you say that which grows from that which drops in the course of the harvest, you're allowed to take it at least. The Chachamim were very concerned that there are people in this world who cheat, and they'll deliberately drop a few extra ones here, there, and everywhere. They'll go out at night and sprinkle. They can't plant the whole field because it'll show very clearly that it's cheating. They drop a few here, there, and everywhere, and it'll grow after the same man. That was the droppings from last year. So the Chachamim were very concerned that it's easy to cheat on Pri Adamah by dropping seeds when nobody's looking and saying, hey, that's what happens. You know what happens? There's always a few grow. Mine's a bit luckier than most. But you would never be able to point the finger at it. The Chachamim said, finished. No tzvichim. There's no such thing as fruit, vegetables or crops which grow of their own accord in Shemitah. If they do grow, you mustn't use them. It's known as Issus Tzvichin. Everything in Pri Adamah which grows of its own accord in the Shemitah year, is, since it's suspect of having been deliberately planted by cheating, Ramayalacham made a blanket Issus Tzvichin with very few exceptions. In a field that's known to be Hefker, nobody would plant it there. There's always been Hefker. In certain cases, certain types of vegetables which nobody plants anyway, they only grow wild. Very, very minor exceptions that Chachamim made to the Issur of Tzvichin. Generally speaking, anything which grows in the Shemitah year of Kveirat Ha'adamah is also as Tzvichin. And that's the first. Now the question is this. What will happen? I presume you know from the advert that that which is picked in Eretz Yisrael can be in the shops within 48 hours. Within 48 hours of picking, you'll see shops that advertise our fruits are 48 hours from picking till they're on the shelf. We certainly have next week things that are picked after Rosh Hashanah. Don't say Rosh Hashanah, they'll be picked on Rosh Hashanah. Let's assume that won't happen. But straight after Rosh Hashanah, within a week from 10 days from today, you could have in your shop things which have been picked in Shemitah. Now, for sure, if they were picked in Shemitah, they've got Kedusha Shemitah. We'll see in a minute what the implications of that are. It would certainly have positions, because Yerek, all vegetables go according to the Lakita. The time was picked in Shemitah, then has positions Shemitah. Does it also have the Issa Svichin? Now you could argue, What was the interest of Israel? Because the Chachamim were frightened that you drop things in Shemitah and make them grow. Well, it couldn't have grown yet. Give it a few weeks before it could actually happen that somebody has cheated and planted in Shemitah and it's growing. So, logically, you would say the Issus Tefichin only starts after there's been enough time for something planted in Shemitah to have grown. Give us a few weeks. Great, Koch. If you look in Ramban in Chumash, on Parshas Baha, in the beginning of Baha, the Ramban writes clearly that the beginning of Shemitah year, yes, it would be Kedusha Shviyah if it's big, but it can't be Issus Tefichin if it hasn't had time to grow. That's the view of the Ramban. In Chumash is the view of the Rash. On the other hand, the Rambam says, you know the famous words of the Chachamim, Lo Plug, when will you stop? When will it start? How long does it take to grow it? How long is a piece of string? Best thing is, from the time Shemitah starts, all vegetables that grow are forbidden because of the din of Tefichin. So they have the Rambam. Now, there are a number of poskim, today poskim, that say you may rely on the Ramban and the Rash, two of the Gedolei Rishonim, who say that there's no immediate issa of Tefichin on vegetables. But you have to bear in mind, as soon as Shemitah comes, there becomes a blanket issa on working on the soil and of taking the crops and using them as a barabos, taking more than you need for your family for a few days. So anything that's sent over here that's been picked after Shemitah, certainly, almost certainly, the people in Eretz Israel that did it transgressed the din of Shemitah. They took it and they transported it and they sent it. Where we come to all these things. There's the Issa sending it to Chutz La'aretz. There's Issa doing business. There's the Issa taking large quantities. So even if you say it hasn't got an Issa of Tefichin, but it certainly has Kedusha Shviyah, and the Kedusha Shviyah has not been kept on those. Anything which you'll find here that's from Eretz Israel. For that reason, there will be a bulletin which ought to be already on the notice board, but it was being sent out on the fortunes before Shabbos, and maybe a day or two to get here. We will keep you, Ben Hashanah, up to date. I don't claim exclusivity, other parts of also giving the same information. What you can expect to find in the shops. So, of course, for the first 7 or 8 months of Shemitah, there will only be Boya for Adamov. There will be no list of any fruits, because no fruits of Shemitah can have arrived yet. It'll have to be well into next summer before you can get restrictions on fruit. But on vegetables, we will endeavour to let you know exactly what is available so that you can know what to avoid. That's known to us as being available at the moment, next week, cherry tomatoes, sweet potatoes, not ordinary potatoes, various herbs, organic peppers, not ordinary peppers, organic peppers apparently is life at a different time. There are no ordinary peppers, but there are organic peppers about, and there may well be fresh sweet corn on the market. Fresh sweet corn may be on the market, which will be from Eretz Yisrael. Look out. Now, if vegetables grow in goyish soil, there's certainly no Issa Tefichin. Because the Issa Tefichin was only made by the Chachamim to stop people cheating. If they're not cheating, they're goyim, they're allowed to plant. So Tefichin there won't be. Whether there's Kedusha Shviyah depends on that Machlekes which is said before to the Beis Yosef and the Mabit. But certainly there will be Kedusha Shviyah there will certainly be no Issa Tefichin, and there will be a Machlekes whether it's Kedusha Shviyah on that which comes from Arab territory. It's unlikely that you here in this country will be able to know where it comes from. I would imagine the majority of things that come here are from Jewish owned lands. Yesterday. So, Minei Yerushalayim, as we said, Minei Yerushalayim was to go with the Shitta of the Beis Yosef, with the Beis Yosef view that the Arab land, or Goyish owned land, has no Kedusha Shviyah, and therefore, certainly in past Shmittas, they sought to get vegetables available for the market from Goyish's own soil. The problem that has arisen, particularly in the last few years, is already it was known in former times that the Goyim could cheat and they could buy produce from Jewish-owned farmers, Jewish owned farms, Jewish farmers, transport them over to their farms, and then pack them there and send them as their own produce. You could well imagine that type of thing going on anywhere in the world. That sort of smuggling going on. So in former times what happened was the Botidinim used to send out showmen to see it actually being either lifted from the soil and put into boxes, and then they put their seal on every box to make sure that they were not being cheated. In recent years it has become very, very risky to send people. I mean, there have even been known cases where they bought produce from Eretz Yisrael and put it into the ground so to take it out again in the presence of the Shema. So the Shema has to be there more than just for 24 hours. It's got to be there for some time. And it's become a risk to life to send Jewish people to sit out on Goyish farms. And therefore, the availability of guaranteed Goyish-owned produce in this coming Shemitah is going to be very limited. To a great extent, they sort of will have to rely on imports to a great extent. Now, let's talk about what is this Kedusha Shviyas. So the Torah tells you already, V'oiso Shabbat O'oreh Sochem Le'ochlo. That's a strange passage. The Torah says, yours, so once it's yours, famous saying, once it's yours, you do what you like with it. Why does the Torah tell you Lochem Le'ochlo? So from this the Gemara derives, yes, Le'ochlo, V'lo Le'hefted. You mustn't misuse it. Eat it, gesunta eat. But you must not misuse it. And this will apply to fruits that grow in Israel and to vegetables where there's no issues. We haven't got many cases of if you say there's kedusha shviyas on Arab soil, then you've got vegetables that have got kedusha shviyas. You'll certainly have fruits which will have kedusha shviyas in all the orchards and all the vineyards and so on. So the first thing is la'achla v'loy lehefted. You must not destroy it. And the Chachamim understood, and there are many Mishnahs on the subject, that any misuse of Peirush Shviyas is called hefted. It's called destroying it. It's wanton destruction. What do I mean by that? If it's edible to humans, then you mustn't feed it to animals. That's destruction. It's not a din in Baltashas, perhaps, and they give bread to the birds if you want. But if it's got Kedusha Shviyas, for as long as it's edible to humans, you mustn't give it to animals. If you take the peel off the fruit, I don't need to tell you there's nothing wrong with eating the peel, it's perfectly edible. You peel an apple, you may be nervous about the chemicals, or you may not like the dirt on the potato peels, they're perfectly edible. There's any question, you can't be bothered washing them. You can't just destroy them. Because if they've got Kedusha Shviyas, you mustn't destroy it. But it goes even further. Most fruits and vegetables are normally eaten either raw or cooked. Let's say potatoes are always eaten cooked. So to eat them raw would be considered destroying them. But let's say green beans are normally eaten cooked. So eating them raw would be considered destroying them. That's considered misusing. Other than destroying, misusing, l'achra means to eat it in the normal way. It goes to the extent where it's questionable whether you're allowed to produce juice out of fruits or vegetables that have kedusha shviyas. Now those things that are normally used primarily for juice, like all the citrus fruits or the grapes, where the vast majority are used, yes, by all means, you can use them for making juice. But if you're going to make a strawberry juice, or melon juice, which is not the normal way of using those fruits, although you may find some things in the house, but not the normal way of using it, then that is considered misuse of Peirush Shviyas. The other thing which the Gemara learns, another example, you have wine which is made from Shviyas produce, and you know the custom is you overfill the cup for Matzah Shabbos, you let it spill over, and then you put the candle into it. If that wine has got kedusha shviyas, that's destroying it. You mustn't put out the candle in the shviyas wine, or do dan sardeya kinim with shviyas wine and then throw out that wine. That is misuse of peirush shviyas. You wouldn't be allowed. You want to take a bit of medicine, so you dissolve it in a bit of juice. If that's got kedusha shviyas in the juice, then that's misusing it by making it bitter, by making it inedible. And it applies to the fields if they're edible, and it applies within a Mishnah to other foods that have absorbed Peiros of Kedusha Shvir. So if you cook your fish and you put in an onion or a carrot which has got Kedusha Shvir, then the fish has got Kedusha Shvir. You have to eat it, you must, you don't have to eat it, you must destroy it, and putting it in a dustbin where it gets mixed with other rubbish is considered destroying it. You have to leave it till it becomes of its own accord. You leave it in a plastic bag till it becomes inedible. Once it's inedible, if it's edible for humans, edible for animals, you've got to feed the animals. If it becomes inedible for animals as well, then you can finally destroy it. But not before then. So, that's one of the big restrictions that there are on Peiros Shvir. They say, yes, you can mash a banana for a child, because that's the only way you can feed the child on it. That's a normal usage of it. But other than that, you have to be careful not to destroy. They say before you wash up, you scrape off all the plates. If you've got food on the Kedusha Shvir, you scrape them off, put the scrapings in a special schmitter bin, and then you can wash them up with the last bits that are left on the plate. So it gives a lot of restrictions. Now, you're not allowed to feed a goy on Peiros Shvir, except a domestic who is working in your house. To give them something to eat or to drink, you're allowed to, but not to give some to give it away to a guy. And then there's the Isser of Schaira, the Ochra of Elohim Schaira. You must take it and then resell. You may take what you need for yourself. If you find you've got too much, you can sell it on to somebody else. But not to take Peiros for Schaira in order to buy it and to sell. The Isser of doing business with Peiros Shvir is one of the restrictions which is learnt from the Ochla of Velo Yitzchayr. This year, you won't have a problem on this, right here. But in this year, in a year's time, there will be a question mark. Maybe if you get enough time, we'll talk about why, in fact, you will find a Yitzchayr from Eretz Yisrael on sale in this year, in a year's time. Over, according to the Pashtas, what we've learnt so far, they ought not to be here in a situation of business where they're being sold. They should be, if they come at all. Another one of the restrictions, you mustn't take Peiros of Shmita into Chutzlaret. You're not allowed to take them out of Eretz Yisrael. Taisus says if you're traveling from Eretz Yisrael, you can take with you enough food for your journey, including delays. Including possible delays on the journey, but not some to take food out to Peiros Shvir, you mustn't take the Chutzlaret. So there are a lot of restrictions. Now there comes another restriction, which to a certain extent bears on Asiyah and Chutz La'aretz. I told you before that the Torah describes Peiros Shmita as Kodesh. So the Gemara says just as anything which is Kodesh, like Hekdesh, something which you give to Beit HaMikdash, if you give money for it, then the condition goes on to the money, it's known as Pidgin, you can redeem it. So also Peiros Shvir, if somebody buys Peiros Shvir, then the money gets Kedusha Shvir. The money then gets the same restrictions which were originally on the Peiros. But whereas with real Hekdesh, the money takes the Kedusha and the Hekdesh loses it, in the case of Shmita they both remain Kodesh, the original Peiros Shmita retain the Kedusha, and the money also gets the Kedusha. Then you spend the money on something else, that gets transferred. So the first and the last always remain Kodesh. Now, what would happen if you go into Tesco and you see they're busy selling cherry tomatoes from Israel, and the person in front of you buys Peiros Shvir, and you know for now that money's got Kodesh Shvir, and then you come along with your paper handkerchief that you just bought, or those the apples which you know have got no Kodesh Shvir, and you give a £20 note, and they give you change. They take it out of the till, the very same money which had on it Kedusha Shvir. What are you going to do now? You don't know which year and which one is and which is not. I won't go into all the various logics that there are to be lenient. There is a tzad, there's a possibility, the Chazanish says, that perhaps if a guy sells it, then the money does not get the Kedusha. Possibly. If you keep Tresco as a guy. The other possibility is that it becomes mixed up. Also a possibility. It is questionable. So those that want to be particular will they go shopping in a shop that is selling Peiru Shvi'ez, besides being careful not to buy it themselves,
they will pay by check or by card or give exact change.
They will avoid, it doesn't make us all the money in the bank. But in the shop where the mokum is known as kavua, where we know that they are selling Peiru Shvi'ez at this particular moment, and you saw it go through this till, not the other till, it could be that it's wrong to take change out of it. But there's a very, very easy way out. Most people have got credit cards or checkbooks, and therefore you don't need to fall into the trap. I'm not saying they are no heterim. They are, there may well be heterim. Oh, but those who are, want to be particular, if you go into a shop that's selling Peiru Shvi'ez, and you buy, pay by check, pay by card, or give exact money. Obviously, for the airbag you took change, we don't need to worry about it. There are enough reasons to be lenient, but there is room to be particular. Now, one thing which I think you'll find on the list when the bulletin comes out, although it's questionable, are flowers. There's a large, vast quantity of flowers that come from Eretz Yisrael. It's questionable whether Kedusha Shvi'ez applies to flowers, particularly flowers that don't have a scent. From the Mishnah you see that flowers do have a scent, do have Kedusha Shvi'ez. Most of the flowers are there, not scented, or not scented to the extent that you buy them for the scent, you buy them for the appearance. That's a question whether they have Kedusha Shvi'ez. But you can be sure, 99% sure, that things have been done to those flowers which are forbidden. They've planted, harvested, watered and everything else that they shouldn't be doing, they have been doing to those flowers. To a certain extent, you are, by buying them, you are Messiah, you're encouraging those that are doing things that they ought not to be doing. During the Shemitah year, the whole of Eretz Yisrael ought to come to a stop agriculturally, and then we get the bracha the year before, as the Chazon Ish says, if everybody kept Shemitah, the bracha would come, there would be no shortages of any kind, everyone would be doing very nicely out of it. Al Koponim, I've given you some idea of what is meant by the restrictions of Kedusha Shvi'ez. Let's just sum it up. You mustn't destroy it, any small part of it, even the peels, the leftovers, you mustn't destroy, you mustn't give them to a goy, you mustn't do business with them, you mustn't take them out from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, and the money that is, or anything that's given in exchange for Peiru Shvi'ez, gets on itself a Kedusha Shvi'ez. Many of you may have read the Mishnah in Sukkah, where the Gemara says, well, you want to buy an estrig from in Shemitah from somebody who you can't trust to use the money in Kedusha Shvi'ez, then you mustn't pay him for the estrig. You must say, I want it free. So I'm not giving it free. Yeah, I don't mind if you charge me treble, 10 times the price for the lulav, as long as you give me the estrig free. Are they taking the Mishnah? Yeah? That's what the Mishnah says. You mustn't give money which will have Kedusha Shvi'ez into the hand of somebody who won't treat it properly, who won't know how to handle it. You mustn't put it into his hand. Therefore, you have to say to him, I insist that you give me the estrig free. I don't mind paying as much as you like. Put up the price of the lulav to cover the estrig as well, but I'm not paying for the estrig. I want to make it perfectly clear. There's another way of avoiding. I don't want to encourage that one. That is paying later. If you don't pay straight away, money which is given at a later date, take it on credit and then pay afterwards. If it's not given at the time of the transaction, even if it's half an hour later, the money will not get the Kedusha Shvi'ez. I don't want to encourage anyone to buy goods and not pay for them. That's a different parasha of the Torah. But when you take goods, you should pay for them. But pay by credit cards, then there won't be any Kedusha Shvi'ez on the money. That shouldn't be a problem. Now, as we've said already, according to the view of the Beis Yosef, I must tell you, because in Yerushalayim they followed the view of the Beis Yosef, and therefore the Bote Dinim saw to it that there was available during Shemitah year sufficient produce either from Chutz La'aretz or from what they called Yevul Nochri. In previous Shemitahs, to a great extent, the Yerushalmi Jew didn't know much about Shemitah. The Rabbonim broke their heads to see that there should be sufficient food which hasn't got Kedusha Shvi'ez. They sought to get it from Goyesha land. But the man in the street didn't impose very much on the man in the street. But Masha Enke and those people living in Bnei Brak, who followed the losing the Chazon Ish, they had to take, we'll see in a minute how they got it, but they had to use fruit and vegetables, did have Kedusha Shvi'ez, and they learnt to live with all the restrictions that there are. Maybe
be something that the shopmen would have to learn in this year more than previous years, because there may be a great shortage of goyish affairs. Let's talk about how it's done. Now the question is, of course, I'm sure you're all aware that there was a move on the part of certain people to try and transfer Jewish owned land into goyish hands just for the duration of Shemitah, known as the Het HaMechira, so it will now become goyish soil, and therefore whatever grows there will be permitted according to the Beis Yosef. There were attempts to go along that road. I think you can understand why many rabbonim didn't like it, and they asked the question, what's the difference of selling chometz over Pesach? We also just transferred technically the ownership to a goy. But I think you would all realize that if someone wanted to sell his bakery to a guy for Pesach and then carry on producing bread throughout Chol HaMoed Pesach, you would more than frown upon it. You would realize that it's a farce. He's selling it, but he carries on working as usual. Those people who went in for the Het HaMechira wanted to carry on working on their soil as usual. But it's not mine, it belongs to a guy. That is a bit, a bit dubious, a bit questionable. Mamela, many rabbonim did not want to go along with the Het HaMechira. But they did look for ways of enabling a Eden to eat goyish produce, we won't have it for vegetables, and ways of making some kind of arrangement whereby all the fruits that grow of their own accord don't just fall into the hands of a few people. So they looked for ways and means, and the Chazon Ish was in the forefront of working out the system. Let's take one by one. We'll start with the Iroquois. For that, they made what's known as a Vada Shmita. A Shmita committee appointed by a Bezdin to do the following. It would be in order to go to a guy and to buy as much fruit or vegetables as you need. Even if I say it's got Kedusha Shmita, according to the Chazon Ish, it's got Kedusha Shmita. The guy was allowed to work in it, and I'm allowed to buy as much as I need for my family for immediate shopping. So are you, and so are you. So if 1,000 of us get together, we don't need to all straight down to the guy and each of us buy your 2 pounds of tomatoes and of peppers and of potatoes. We don't have to each go individually down to the guy. So we'll take one of our number and we will send him along to the guy, and he should buy on our behalf. Now, since he's buying for each family only as much as they need for this week, for each family, he is a shliach. He is appointed as an official delegate to go and buy on behalf of each family as much as they need. Therefore, he's not transgressing the issur of schoira, because you're allowed to buy as much as you need. It's clear to the Gemara, you can buy from the farmer as much as you need. So if he's buying it on our behalf, then that's okay, and then you have to distribute it. So you can do that on a bigger scale. So the Vada Shmita will find somebody who, probably someone who's got some experience in the business of buying and selling fruit, and they'll appoint him. Now, each person that wants to be able to buy from this Vada Shmita produce will have to sign up that he's a member before it starts. So I'll go and buy a few if you didn't appoint them. So therefore, all those people that want to be able to buy from Goyish fields without doing any Issa have to join up, sign themselves up as members of a Vada Shmita. Now, some of them are very strict, and they lay down, you have to put the quantities that you need, you have to put in an order every week, and they'll go that week and buy the exact quantity that has been ordered. And that's being very, very strict. It doesn't make it much more difficult, but it can be done that way. There are certain vadim that are particular. Every member has to put in an order every week, how much you need for next week, and we'll go to the farm to buy it for you and bring it into the distribution centre or to the shop, and then you'll get it from there. Those that are a bit more lenient allow you to place a blanket order. I want during the course of next year you should provide me for my family among all the other thousands of people. You bring in the produce and what's called in the Gemara, yes, brera, whatever each person finally takes, that's the one which he has originally joined up and it was bought on his behalf. So the vegetables are being bought on your behalf from each individual from the farmer. That is the Vada Shmita is appointed by a responsible authority, and they have to guarantee that all the rules, that not only all the rules of how it works, but all the rules are being kept. So that's one way in which you can get what's called Yevul Nochri with Kedushas Shvir, you'll have to look after it, without transgressing the Isser of Sfeira, without transgressing the Isser of any of the Isserim of Shmita. Insofar as Eiris is concerned, which will be in the year's time, the year's Hashem, there's another system which the Ramban and Chumash already brings down, and that is that Beis Din have a right to, not exactly to confiscate, but Beis Din have a right to take over whole vineyards, whole orchards, and to distribute them free. In other words, to save each individual going down to the farm, the Beis Din can appoint somebody, go and bring it, whereas an individual is not allowed to take more than his own personal requirements for the next few days. Beis Din have a heter to send somebody down on their behalf, take the whole of the produce, and then bring it into distribution centers and distribute it free. Because it's heter. Not like the vegetables. The vegetables in the Arab land are not free. You've got to pay for them. That's the Baal Shmita has to pay, but they have to have your authority to buy them. The Oitzer Beis Din, as it's known, that works on the orchards and on the fruit, they are allowed to take charge of hefka, and then they distribute it free. But, of course, there are costs. There are labor costs, there are transport costs, there are packaging costs, there are warehousing costs. They can recoup their costs. They mustn't charge for the fruit, but they can recoup their costs. And anyone who's in business will know that the cost of the raw materials is only a small percentage of the cost of anything you buy. The actual cost of the raw material itself is a tiny percentage. The majority of the cost is ancillary costs. It's the labour, for picking and transporting it. It's the cost of transport, it's the cost of packaging material and warehousing, and then somebody to sell it. For all those they can charge. So what happens at the end is that the fruits are distributed free from distribution centres, not from shops. It's a Beis Din. The storehouse belonging to the Beis Din, and the price should be noticeably less than ordinary fruits on the market, because you're not paying for the produce. The produce is hefker, and it's in the reshus of the Beis Din, and it's being distributed free for those that are willing to defray the costs which the Beis Din were involved in. That's known as the Oitzer Beis Din, and you'll see them somewhere on the back of a lorry in Israel, or from a garage somewhere. All of a sudden, oranges that turn out for other fruits. It's an irregular sort of supply. It's not as well organized as a shop, but it's a free distribution for those that are willing to defray the costs that were involved in picking, transporting, not in production, not for the fruit itself, in the picking, in the transport, in the warehousing, and so on and so forth. Labor. Now, so that's the two types of produce which you will get with reliable nechsherim. You'll get vegetables from Baal HaShmita, for which you must have signed up before you started. If you didn't sign up, you have to schnorr from somebody that did sign up. They may not throw you out of the shop. There may be a heter to sell a little bit on the side. Or basically, it's reserved for those people that signed up membership before the buying started. And in the fruits, you'll get them distributed free at what in fact is a reduced cost. Now, we've got two more aspects, or three more aspects of Shmita to talk about. And this also applies to us very, very strongly, very applicable. The Torah says, "V'linhetzecho v'lachayah shevartecho tiecho t'v'oso lechol." It should be for the wild animals. What's the Torah to tell you? It's got to be for the wild animals. So Rashi and Chumash really points out, for as long as there is produce available for the animals in the field, then you're allowed to keep stock of whatever you have that you need for yourself. But when there comes the day, when there's nothing left in the field, then you're obliged to take anything which you have of that type of fruit or vegetable, anything that you have in your possession, carry it out onto the street and say it's hefker. I declare it hefker. Anybody can take it. In front of the presence of three people, they don't have to take it. But you must declare it hefker. And if you didn't, then it becomes osur for anybody to eat forever. You've transgressed the mitzvah of bil, and therefore the produce becomes forbidden. Now, any fresh produce that comes here will not be after this manabir, it wouldn't get here. But it will apply to juices, to wines, and things which have a long shelf life. You can have them hanging around long after the Zman HaBir. It's possible. Now, you need to know what happened to it when it came to the Zman HaBir. For a number of fruits that the Chachomim already gave us, when is it? There are fixed times for it. The Gemara says dates finish off in Purim, olives finish Shavuos time, grapes finish Pesach time. For a number of fruits, the Chachomim told us exactly when you can anticipate. And it follows that pattern. So you know when it comes to that date, you take out anything which you have in stock, which you bought from the Eitz HaBezdin. You bought it from the Eitz HaBezdin. The Eitz HaBezdin take grapes and produce wine, which they're allowed to do. They can do it on a large scale, which individuals mustn't do. On a large scale, they produce wine. They distributed it free, or almost free. And then you've got stock. When it comes to this manner of beer, the time of beer, carry it out. Face of time, you put it out on the street and say, I declare Hefka. Nobody takes it within 5 seconds, you can take it back yourself. You don't have to wait very long. You put it out there in front of 3 people, declare it Hefka, and then you've got as much time as anybody else to take it. After that, you don't have to do anything further with it, but it will still have Kedusha Shvi'is. You still mustn't put your Avdolah candle into it, it's still got Kedusha Shvi'is, but you have not transgressed the time of Biur. What happens if it was in the possession of the Eitz HaBezdin when the time of Biur came? What happens then? Bezdin are not mechuyev to declare hefka. It is already hefka. Why do they care? They're not keeping it for themselves. They're keeping it because it's hefka. So therefore, if this mana bir, the time will be arrived when it was in the hands of the bezdin, there are no further dinim of biur. But if it was in the hands of an individual and he didn't put it out as hefka, or even someone else had taken it from the Eitz HaBezdin, he had it in his own possession, and he didn't declare it hefka, then it becomes osur.
I had my first shiloh on Shmita this time on Thursday night. Somebody woke me up in a panic from Eretz Yisrael. They made food for Shabbos with wine in it, and then noticed, or somebody else noticed, that written on the wine bottle where it was from Yavur Shmita Tov Shein Sabach Aleph. The wine is 7 years old, 6 years old, and it got into the dinner. So you have to throw it all out. Long past the Zman HaBir. You're 5 years behind time for the Zman HaBir.
But actually, I know for a fact that last Shemitah, there was a great surplus of wine, and the quality was not so high that they could get rid of it easily, and there was a big surplus which was left from Eitz HaBezdin. If it had a reliable Hechsher, then it must have been in the Eitz HaBezdin when the Zman HaBir came at that time. If it was in the hands of an individual of a Haimash individual, who would also have known in Eretz Yisrael, there are big notices when it comes to the Zman HaBir, everyone is reminded. So you can be confident that either it was still in the hand of the Eitz HaBezdin when the Zman HaBir came 5.5 years ago, or it was in the hand of an individual who declared it Hefka, and then he may not be the person who declared it Hefka, he may be the person who picked it up. But if it didn't, it wasn't treated as it should have been at the Zman HaBir, then it becomes osur for all time. If it was the hand of a guy, the guy's got no mitzvah deal, then the minute you buy it from him, or you get it from him, you have to be the buyer to declare it hefka as soon as it comes into your possession. That's the basic dinim of deal. Now, it gets complicated with certain fruits which you don't have a date given in the Gemara, and we have to leave that to them in Eretz Yisrael to advise those what to do with it, have any stocks of things which don't have a very clear cut-off date. Now, I only want to tell you 2 more points. It won't take me very long. First of all, there has been a lot of controversy about what you can grow in Eretz Yisrael detached from the earth, and therefore shouldn't have Kedusha Shvi'is. It's a very, very vexed question. In the Gemara there's a discussion about Otzit Shein and Nokol, if you remember the plant part, whether it's possible on a commercial scale to produce fruits or vegetables more likely than fruits. Fruits are not difficult to grow anyway. To produce vegetables, lettuce and all the rest of it on like they did in Gush Katif before it was, before it was given back. Whether it's still possible in Eretz Yisrael to produce detached vegetables and to say they have no Kedusha Shmita is a very, very vexed question. Even the great Rabbanim Eretz Yisrael today are to a certain extent undecided. Whether any of it will become available in this country or not, I don't know yet, but it is, all of it is subject to controversy. There's none of it that's glass, that's absolutely certain as being exempt from Shmita. It is a subject of great discussion. There's pages and pages, books, whole books that have been written on the subject. It's a very difficult question. It depends, it hinges on the difficulty of Yerushalmi, and Yerushalmi is a boy, and Ipshita. It's a very complicated question. But there will possibly be some of this available. When it comes to the Sreikim, this year is not a problem, but next year will be a problem. Obviously, all those that are sincere in their Yiddishkeit will not be selling them in the normal way. They will only be selling as Shluchei Beis Din on behalf of the Beis Din. The price, logically, should be considerably lower than a normal year. There shouldn't be such a lot of price variations. They're not trying to make money out of it. They're only trying to recoup the costs for the transport and for all the other outgoings, and for their own time. The ones who give up time and space for it, and they have to charge for it. But there should be, hopefully, a noticeable reduction in the price. The heter to send them to Chutz La'aretz, some say that the issur to send to Chutz La'aretz is a derabbanan, and you send it through a guy, it becomes a shvus to shvus, and a shvus to shvus b'moch a mitzvah. There are other heterim which will allow and to enable all of us that are privileged to live in Esrog to have a sreikim for Shmita. The Rabbonim go along with some of the, all of them go along to enable people living in Chutz La'aretz to have nice sreikim for the year of Shmita. So that's as much as I can tell you about the sreikim. Now let me give you one last thought. Of course, it's highly advisable, you will have realized this year, for the next year to avoid buying any yarokos, any vegetables that are from Eretz Yisrael. Because at the very least, they will have kedushas shmita, and it's a question of what you do with the money that was paid for it, whether you should, they shouldn't be doing business with it, they shouldn't be sending it to the Oret, and you shouldn't encourage them. Look at it with a positive light, that is solidarity. You're showing your solidarity to those that keep Shmita by not buying from those that don't keep Shmita. That is solidarity with Eretz Yisrael. Now, what happens if you bought it without checking and you can't determine whether they're from Eretz Yisrael or not? In the vast majority of cases, you'll be able to say, called the Porish Merubah Porish Mistoma, the majority, it's highly unlikely that any particular type at any given time will have the majority from Eretz Yisrael. So, b'di eved, and you can't determine it, you'll be allowed to rely on the majority if it's not clearly marked as being from Eretz Yisrael. If it's clearly marked as being from Eretz Yisrael, that's it. If you pick it up in the supermarket and you haven't paid for it yet at the cash out, you can go and put it back on the shelf. You're not giving it to them, it's theirs still. Once you've paid for it, as far as they're concerned, it's yours. Oh, it's from Eretz Yisrael. Too late to give it back, because you mustn't give Peirush Shvi'is in the hands of a goy. So you take it home and you let it rot. If you want to eat it, because Kedusha Shvi'is is questionable, after the next, in 4 weeks' time, it would be too late to eat the vegetables, because they'll all come under, it's a svichim, even according to the Rash, according to what we explained. Once there has been enough time for them to have grown after Rosh Hashanah, then there's a danger that they've been planted after Rosh Hashanah, and maybe they'll be also because of svichim. So you won't have any heta. The only thing you do, put it in a plastic bag, leave it at the back of the garden until it's inedible, and then get rid of it. And what should I say finally? I say in conclusion that the Torah regards those that observe Shmita with a very, very high regard. The Gemara says in the Pasuk, Baruch Hashem Malachim Gibborei Koyach, the ones who are like angels and who have infinite strength are those that keep Shmita properly. So if we accept on ourselves certain restrictions because of the Dinim of Shmita, and we think to ourselves, if we lived in Eretz Yisrael, we would keep all the Dinim, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will perhaps accept it as if we kept the Dinim of Shmita properly. And may you all be zeicha with the schus of coming to the Shir, and the schus of all the other mitzvahs that you do, and the schus of the Torah that you learn, and the schus of belonging to this congregation, which has a rabbi whom I know personally, do everything to further and to promote the learning of Torah and Yiddishkeit. In that schus, may you all be zeicha, so a ksiva, a chasima tova, and a shnas. bracha of Hatzlach in everything you undertake, and we should be to hear the shofar of Mashiach and hear the Amen.